What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock. After a week hiatus for Kansas City and the World Cup, we are back. And I figure, you know what? You know, Saris, it's been so long since you've been here. So I got to bring you back. How you doing, man? What's going on?
Doing great. Saw an amazing World Cup game last night. And last week we went to the top of a volcano and into a waterfall and onto a lake and into a cave. So we had a great vacation.
Well, here's the thing. What we're going to do today is talk about a lot of the pitchers who have made me want to stand on top of that volcano across the last month. And the guys who have been struggling plenty, and what is going on with them? Is there something that we can fix? Is there a tweak? Is it something that is just an anomaly? And I'm going to skip over some of the basic ones, like Mitch Keller. It's Mitch Keller to me personally. Shota Imanaga is something someone we both said, I believe, sell high. He has a tough series of outings. And then for me, for the last two against Colorado before them, I was buying back in. And I imagine you might be too. I'm not sure. I know it's June Wrigley. It's halfway through. So maybe, you know, if you're expecting it not to be so good for two more weeks or so, maybe it gets better after this. Are you still selling Imanaga's recent thing, really recent two games, or are you buying back in at this point?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I threw the last 30 days ERA in with the oopsie projections to find a top 30 in difference. And of course, Mitch Keller and Shota are number one and number two because they both have the same projected ERA going forward by oopsie.
What?
Yes, they do. 4.31 for Keller, 4.32 for Shota. So
why would you do this to me? Like, I'm such a nice host. I bring you on to my podcast as you're the guest, clearly. And you're gonna tell me that Keller and Imanaga are going to be the same pitcher.
Well, that's just by ERA. One thing that I did notice recently trolling around on the new StatCast leaderboards that include miss distance was that Shota's sweeper is in the, I think, the top 10 for starters in terms of miss distance. And it makes me think a little bit of how our biggest disagreement, I think, that's come up a bunch of times about Shota is that I keep calling him a two-pitch pitcher and you keep saying, what about the sweeper? And another thing that I think that is hard for models and even for us to fully dial into, even anecdotally or just as human beings, is how much secondary pitches interact with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We tend to think as pitching is sort of binary, start with the fastball, everything plays off the fastball, because the fastball is still the number one most thrown pitch in baseball. But you know, maybe Shota is able to work that sweeper and split off of each other.
Yeah.
You know, at least against righties and maybe even against lefties. I have also noticed that people that have well-rated sweepers where the models tell them that they'd still be okay against lefties, they're throwing those sweepers against lefties. So, yeah, I guess I've underrated Shota for having a more of a wider arsenal than, you know, I wanted to give him credit for. But I guess the other thing is, in the past, what we've seen with him is a dip in velocity as the season goes on.
Yeah.
That has coincided with the weather warming and the home run rate rising. And I don't really see much evidence of the velocity dropping. I mean, yes,
it's two still.
Yeah, his two or three best games were early in the season.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's still sitting at a pretty good spot. His lowest games this year are all better than where he sat in the second half last year.
Yeah, definitely.
So point. I don't see it just quite yet. And you know, I think he's I think probably the 4.32 from Steamer is a little bit high. I'm gonna buy, you know, an under, like a high threes ERA. And for what it's worth, like, I think people look at high threes ERA guys and like think, oh, well, that's not very valuable. But, you know, the league ERA right now is a 4.18. And for starters, it's 4.25. So if you can have a 3.8 ERA, like, you're fantasy worthy. You're a good pitcher. It may just not be, you know, top 25 type pitcher.
Right. So one thing I do want to mention is you have certainly talked a lot about tunneling secondaries, having different ones and the variety this year. And really part of the whole conversation of having the wider arsenal, right? The expansion of just the, what I call the RAS pack, which is the four-seamer sinker cutter as the right. But it's the three of like normally a five pitch mix that you actually remember. Like Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., two others I can't name. And and of course, Drew Rasmussen is the main person behind the RAS pack. So that idea can also move into secondaries as well. I think that actually Kyle Bradish, when he's working, the curveball and the slider do that effectively together as well. With Shota, I mean, it's really... It's interesting you're crediting me with like, oh, he has a wider pitch mix. But the thing that you always said back to it, which makes sense, is that it's sweeper to lefties and splitter to righties. Right. So it's still always kind of two pitch. And even what's really funny is that in these last two games that were successful, really moved away from the sweeper and the sinker, the two pitches that allowed all of the damage against in his previous outing, right? The splitter was a home run and it was PCA diving and missing a ball. And that's an inside the park home run. And I hate that so much beyond belief. That is an error. You should just play it on a hop and it's a single.
Oh, I think like 80% of inside the park home runs
don't exist. They don't exist unless they're Kareem in a ridiculous way. But even that is the defense playing it poorly. Yeah. There should be a backup outfielder in that area. I'm sorry, but there is no such thing as inside the park home run because the Polo Grounds is gone. Okay.
So what was going on in that bad stretch where he gave up 26 runs and four starts? Like,
what do you think it was
in the mix?
Home runs.
Yeah.
I mean, it's often, I constantly
day games
go back and forth on this of like the nihilism of baseball analysts of just like, it doesn't matter. It was home runs. Like, that he allows two home runs on this game or not? Like, I don't know, right? And you see this even with someone else on this list. It's, you know, it's Ryan Weathers. He's just allowing home runs a ton right now. And yeah, it's the noisiest of stats. We know this. That home run rate.
I would put Shota's stretch up against somebody maybe I'm a little bit more worried about that's on this list. He only showed up with the 17th biggest difference between last 30 ERA and next and projected. And that's Michael King with a 5.08 recently and a 4.02 going forward. And I think, you know, what you're talking about with Shota, you know, kind of brings Michael King into focus for me, because what bothers me about Michael King, and I tried to look through the pitch mix and the approach changes and stuff, and nothing really leaps off the page except using the four seam less. And maybe that is what it is, because, you know, there's some similarities here between like a Jose Soriano, if that's weird to say.
Yes. Yes.
He needs the four seam to spread the area that batters have to cover. And when he doesn't throw the four seam, he becomes a sinker sweeper guy, you know?
Sure.
And so he hasn't thrown the four seam, and there's been home runs. But the biggest thing when I look at Michael King that bothers me is that he has thrown 23 innings in his last four starts and has 10 strikeouts.
Yeah, right.
That right? I do not like. I do not like that. And there's no like real obvious change in velocity. You know, it's a little bit down maybe. His four seam, you know, in terms of movement, it's never been a great pitch in movement. I guess it's lost maybe a little bit of ride. I mean, what do you see that could?
This is actually an easy one. You gave what's really funny, guys, is I remember, I think it was this time last year. No, it was maybe like the third podcast we ever did. It was when Pablo Lopez was struggling in the first like 2-3 weeks. And what you said to me was, Nick, you know what? I'm going to start this episode with a softball. So it's nice and easy for you. What's wrong with Pablo Lopez?
Yeah.
I had no idea. I was like, this is the softball. Like, I don't think about it. I think he's just going to be fine. Like, I haven't done any deal. Oh, God. Okay. All right. Oh. You know, but you did give me a softball this time. Okay. Because if you guys didn't know, I have this wonderful baseball dashboard I've made for myself. I've been expanding on it for the past 5 months. And building it and building and building it. And I will be giving it to our PL Pro members in about, I want to say before the end of the year, as we start pushing that out. But you guys will have access to this with live data and everything. And I just put out an update that allowed you to look at pitch results easily over games, just quickly inside of it. And I implore you right now, Eno, you have this dashboard. If you go to overview and change up, you will see two major numbers just disappear. One is put away rate. And put away rate, when you throw it in a two strike count, how often do you return a strikeout? Let's see. On the 24th, zero. 30th, zero. On the 5th, zero. On the 10th, 11%. On the 16th, zero. Okay. So no strikeouts, say for I think one on the 10th on his changeup. Well, then wait, what's the swing strike rate in it? Oh my gosh, it's 16% for the season. However, in this five-game stretch, it is 11%. And if you think about this, wait, hold on a second. If the entire season is 16 and that's just 11, what was it before the stretch? It was an 18%. That's a seven-point drop in swing strike rate on your changeup. Mm-hmm. And I see Michael King, who is a cross-body mechanics pitcher. This is a thing I've really harped on for a long time since like Arrieta and Ottavino and Freddy Peralta was like this. If you are a crossbody guy, you are going to be filthy when you're on, and when you're off, it just does not work. You don't know where it's going to go as much. It is hard for you to have that precision. And with Michael King being such a command guy, for him to have one of his biggest weapons, this changeup, to just be not missing bats and not going where he wants to, especially in two strike counts. He's not getting those strikeouts that he used to get. It is a huge issue. It pushes up the pitch count faster. It pushes up the walks more. And as you mentioned with the four seamer, his strike rate has fallen dramatically on that as well. So now he's throwing fewer of those. Then the sweeper is fine against right-handers, not really against left-handers. And then you have the sinker that is not doing the front hip thing. Michael King was like the only guy in the majors who I trusted to throw front hip sinkers OO to a left-hander, right? He's not doing that right now. So you add up all of that, it's like, oh my gosh, this guy just does not have feel. And do you know what his next three starts are, you know, from Michael King?
Wait. I've got the app open. Oh, God. Oh, that's not good. He's got Atlanta and then the Dodgers in a double tap. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Three straight. Atlanta, Dodgers.
I think I have a little more evidence for what you're talking about.
It feels like a 12-team drop at this point.
Yeah, it's a real tough rank for me because I have that 15-team bias, and I also have a keeper league kind of bias just in my head. Mm-hmm. When you say drop, I'm like, wow, Michael King's gonna have better days, But in the immediate moment, where do I rank him is definitely a tough one. I think I might have more evidence for what you're saying about the mechanical influence of what's happening. His arm angle has dropped from the beginning of season. And even when he came back from injury on the four seam, it was near 35. Now it's below 30. So his arm angle has dropped 5 degrees, over the course of the last month. And given his injury history and what we know about even fatigue for him, he's not been a guy who has had a lot of full seasons on his resume. There's something going on there. And then in the last game, the arm angle on his sinker was suddenly the highest it's been all year. So this to me sort of speaks to someone fiddling with something mechanic. Yeah.
Well, I mean, at least that's good though, right? Like you want him to fiddle. You don't want him to be like, oh, this is what it is. And that's it, right. You want him to try to search for an answer.
The separate thing that I've always found interesting is that his changeup has never been rated well by Stuff Plus, but it has had good numbers despite. And so I've thought it had to do with Command. Is there a metric I could be looking at in this dashboard that would tell us about the command of the pitch? I'm looking at, I believe, change-up.
I got basic ones for you. Obviously, strike rate and zone rate, you can look at quickly here. Do not have PLV in here yet.
The strike rate, like recently, his two of his worst games of the season. The last two games are among his worst games of the season in terms of strike rate on the changeup. You know, when I look at something like the location plus on the changeup, it has been very erratic this year as opposed to just a plus across the board in past seasons.
Yeah. I mean, at the very least, he's still getting weak contact on it, right? It's just like, okay, can you please induce more whiffs? Actually, his own swing is below 40% in the last three starts on this changeup, and that's been consistently
higher. It's the worst location plus of his starting career. So, like, yeah, something's off. I think it's a small thing, hopefully. And he could recover it. You don't want him for the next three starts. And what I like to do in this case sometimes is shop the projections and just say, okay, I don't know. Like, I'm not taking the nicest projection, Steamer 3.95 ERA. I don't know if I'm taking the Bad X. Often has, I mean, the Bad X now has Stuff Plus in it too. He has his own Stuff Plus in it. Ooh. And so that's, that on top of the fact that the Bad X often projects like a different run environment than other people. So he's got a 4.57 projected ERA for Michael King going forward. Wow. That would make him an easy drop.
Okay. Yeah. One of the things that I think is really difficult, and I want to spend some time this offseason really trying to figure out, is quantifying next 2-3 weeks versus the rest of the year. I mean, I think it's every single year, this is the hardest thing that we do as fantasy managers. You see someone who's not performing well that we all expected to do well earlier on. And we don't know, when do we cut the cord? When do we move on? Is there something that we really can understand? And also, when it comes to schedule, how valuable is it with the percentage of that returning and the percentage of these being bad? How valuable is that hold in that stash through that time?
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, you know, let's say I look at those three starts. I'm like, I'm not starting Michael King for those three starts. Totally makes sense. Then are you holding him? Because you need to have an idea of what his value is in, say, July, you know, like almost like a monthly projected value, right? That's simulated against actual opponents, you know?
Exactly. It's a really hard thing to balance. And I often say value now is worth three times value later. And it really depends on your situation if you're able to do it. But it does feel like right now, if I have Michael King, I don't want to hold on to Michael King.
Well,
if there is something of value on the wire, which is always the other question you have to ask.
And right now, there's such scarcity on the wire. I'm just doing my rankings right now. I have over 40 pitchers that I've removed off the rankings because they're injured. And
welcome.
Would normally be in a top 125.
Now you didn't get it. Well, you know, that's like every year, though. Every year it's like
that. I mean, I get it, but like, that means that now my 80th ranked pitchers are actually my 125th ranked pitchers. So, and then I have people on here I never would have ranked.
So yeah, absolutely.
In the light of that, I mean, in my 15 team leagues, it's easy. I picked up this week Ryan Gusto for his two step. I picked up Brady Singer for his two step next week. Okay. I picked up Andrew Alvarez. I'm playing a lot of Andrew Alvarez. Huh?
You are in on Andrew Alvarez.
A little bit. I mean, the breaking balls are good. He's spamming breaking balls. He's reduced the fastball. It's going to be worse as a starting pitcher, and he's going like four innings at a time.
That's so the thing. The Nationals feel like, oh, five innings. You know?
Yeah.
So that's the biggest worry I have there. But I understand the pool is way different now. I have a streaming image. I don't know. I'll send it to Josh Sperry after this to maybe put it on screen, but it is a joke among the Twitch community. All right, so this is the chart. All right, this is one I made years ago, and I have two other iterations of it, and I kept updating every year. So if you notice at the top, it says streaming chart final. And it's like final
other version
3 edited, you know. And if you're listening to this, this is just a really good reason that you got to watch this on YouTube. It's just so much better. And here we go. We've got smiley face at the top. That's good. Frowny face near the bottom, right? And I'm going to walk everybody through this quickly. So at the beginning of the year, there are two things you're trying to go for, really getting an SP4 or 5 and streamers. But I just focused on streamers in this one. In the beginning, it's a little bit hard because you don't really know which are the good offenses. You don't know how deep guys are going into games. However, there is some value where there's these underrated players that everyone's like, okay, he was drafted at 400 ADP in like October and he never moved, but he's the SP5 and all of a sudden he's great. So you get some value. You see the first start and you can get someone after that one. Mm-hmm. And then it's like a dearth of value because no one changes. Like the first three starts, no one gets removed or there's a replacement or anything like that. Everyone swoops in. Everyone has all the things that they're willing to drop, whatever. And it gets kind of bad by the middle of April. It gets really bad. But then it goes amazing. Now all of the things that we are like, okay, the first two starts are bad, Dustin May. And then it smooths out. We get past all this. So the idiots drop the stew. Oh my God, this guy's bad. Ha ha, you take advantage of the tacos. Sorry, they are not idiots. I understand. Anyway, it's amazing. Like the beginning of May, all the fun prospects are coming up that you like. That's when we got like Tolley in there. That's when we got Logan Henderson. That's when we got the fun stuff with beginning, Mick Abel. It's all there. But now we're here, you know. We are right exactly where we're talking about, right in like the middle of June, where it just gets bad. And why does it get
injury death zone injuries?
Right. Injuries are starting to prop up. Teams are still hesitant to promote that prospect that we want them to do. We are also getting warmer weather. And guys who are on hot streaks in the cold, they slow down, right? Jose Soriano slowed down. Davis Martin slowed down.
Bryce like not every down. Home run is unearned. I mean, there's some of it has to do with the weather warming up and turning, giving 5 feet to those fly balls.
Now, people watching on YouTube are going to enjoy. They're like, wait, hold on, Nick. After that valley, what is this?
What happened in July?
Circled three times over, giant check mark, a plateau with a small dip. And long story short, what happens by the start of July is that July 4th happens and the All-Star break happened. In fantasy leagues, people stop caring. People stop caring. They do not have the same intensity. Meanwhile, you're reading the roundup and you're following the little stretches of like Andre Pallante throwing inside four seamers down to lefties effectively, right? And all the prospects come up and we understand who are good.
Teams start promoting those prospects. Yeah.
Yes. And it's just amazing. But then you get to the middle and end of September, and my gosh, any of you who are in weekly leagues know how horrible it is trying to predict the last 2 weeks of the season.
Oh, just even who's pitching is hard. Just
who's pitching? How long are they going? Are they are they done? Are they just like, oh, you know what? I've run out of gas. It gets colder and they don't know what to do sometimes with it. It is horrendous.
To be fair, that's horrendous in every sport. I play fantasy basketball. The load management goes through the roof in the last couple weeks of the season. You know,
so here you go. You know, I just want to share this with everyone because you are preaching to the choir.
So what are we doing now with Michael King in the face of this awesome graph? Because right now it feels like there's so much scarcity that I want to hold on to Michael King later. It's the frozen banana bit for Mitch Hedberg. Do I want banana now? But do I want a frozen banana? No, but I want a regular banana later. So, you know, I would say I'm looking around and I don't see anything better than Michael King on the wire right now. So I'm going to hold Michael King through these three that I don't start.
Well, there you go.
You're saying now is more valuable than later and that there might be great days ahead. So,
well, I'm saying, right. The second question you always have to ask whenever I hear, should I drop this player, is who is available? It's always right. Like, that is it. I want to at least get into your heads. Look, you do not have to hold on to a guy because it could be this. That is a problem I have a lot myself. Yeah. It could be this while, you know, we're looking at guys getting like five innings of this and that. And I'm like, this dude is just going six innings every single time and is good at the ballpark arena. Like, why have I not done this yet? Right. And it's, that is the kind of decision you want to, you know, you want to reframe it in your head as much as you can. And we probably need to reframe it with a couple other guys on this incredible leaderboard. And we're going to talk about them, like maybe Brian Wu after this break. I said maybe Brian Wu, but we're not going to talk about him.
That's showbiz, baby.
No, I'm just kidding. All right, Brian Wu, it's home runs. That's all I got for you. Nice. Terrible speaker to Alonso.
I do wonder sometimes with the Rat Pack, Raz Pack, you know, Triforce guys, that, I mean, it's maybe a more of a long-term concern than an in-season concern, but, you know, I wonder, like, does it work at lower velos? Do we, you know, like, is part of why Chad Patrick was part of this group, you know, Chad, like, I used to think, you know, Chad Patrick, Brandon Woodruff is a guy who's basically Triforce. Who are Cam Schlittler is the godfather of the group. I mean, Hunter
well,
Brown,
Drew Rasmussen.
I mean, not godfather. He's the new friend.
Frank Sinatra Jr.
Yeah. He's the wunderkind, you know, Hunter Brown is in this conversation. Sure. So we have plenty of examples of it working. Do we have examples of it working in the face of velo loss? Do we have examples of it working for a long time?
Okay.
I don't, with Woodruff, you know, we do have velocity loss and a level of credibility, but not the great level of excellence we used to have, but he also has great command. So, but maybe command is a prerequisite for doing this, because if you have three fastballs, you don't have command of any of them, then what's the use? So,
well, yeah, tell that to Graham Ashcraft. Right?
Mm.
Graham Ashcraft to me fits that a lot. I mean, sure, you want to say it was a four-seamer and cutter and a slider, but really you could say the cutter was the cut fastball and then the slider was the cutter and then the sinker
a little bit.
And then you have the slower version of that was the old Mitch Spence. Now he's like the McLean trying to go sinker, cutter, sweeper.
I haven't checked back in with him. Is he starting or what is he doing?
He went to the Royals and they needed a spot start. And so he just went in the box 60 pitches and we're like, is that it? I was like, whoa,
my overall question is, does it worry you at all? Do you think about like, I think it's a relatively new thing. I mean, Lance Lynn exists.
It's hard because I feel like CC Sabathia, did he do that?
That's a good example. The cutter was early on in his career, he had a great breaking ball, I think.
Right. He was more of a powering with that. But I think about a lot of the guys we think of as crafty. Roy Halladay. Isn't that what Roy Halladay did?
Yeah. They had a lot of fastballs.
Right. I mean, I wish we think about the game now, did not at all think about this like 15, 20 years ago. I mean, yeah.
We also don't have tools that go all the way back. Exactly. Pitch tracking itself just goes to 2008.
Yeah.
So did even, and in eight, you can't really rely on. So you can only go back to about 2009, 2010. If you even want to talk about something as simple as high fastball guys, and the game it feels so different too, when you're talking about, you know, that sort of thing, you know?
Absolutely. You can make a case that Corey Kluber did this. Because Kluber had really an 80-89 cutter, and then he had whatever that two-planer was. I said you could argue, not that I want to argue.
Oh, okay.
And he threw a four-seamer and a sinker, right? But yeah,
I went back to 2010.
Irvin Santana did this.
Oh, yeah.
He was all about this against lefties.
I mean, some of these guys that we're talking about, I guess Wu has a good sweeper. What are the best pitches? Rasmussen has a curve, but he doesn't throw it much.
Well, he has a changeup that he's starting to throw more to lefties, which he did really well against the Dodgers on
Woodruff tonight. Woodruff's throwing his changeup. I just sorted 2010 by cutter usage to kind of capture this. And the closest that I have here, Dan Herron threw 235 innings that year with
30% fastball, 30% cutter, 11% sinker.
So one thing I will note, I have no idea how much I trust the classification of cutter back then.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a good point. Cliff Lee.
He was on my list. I'm like, isn't he a guy? But he had also a big curveball. But yeah.
This year in 2010, Cliff Lee threw his curveball 6% of the time, changed up 9% of the time.
So the Yankees do that to him, huh? No, just kidding.
John Lester had multiple seconds.
Okay, yeah, he certainly did. I mean,
Hudson.
Reminds me. What was that?
Tim Hudson.
Oh,
but yeah. These aren't great names back then.
Rich Harden names that we have now. I don't know. He was a splitter guy. Yeah.
The names we have now seem better.
Well, these are the lower this is what you're looking for, lower velocity.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Okay, and they were also pitching to contact. They weren't trying to.
I have a bias that I'm like, it's a stuff bias or it's like a pitching ninja bias where it's like, I want them to have a big pitch where I'm like,
right.
Look at that slider curveball changeup, Roy Halladay is a pretty good example actually, but he didn't throw many four seamers according to this.
Did he not? Okay. Yeah. I'm thinking of like
Roy Oswalt.
What did Arrieta like his? The reason why
Arrieta was like a sweeper. That was a sweeper.
That was 91. He was a sinker
sweeper guy.
In his peak, it was 91.
I mean, in my mind's eye, it looks like a sweeper.
Right. So, so you guys know, Arrieta, I believe, is the reason why sweeper is ST, just so you know. Right.
Because he's the first sweeper guy
they were making slutter because of. Jake Arrieta, and then they stopped doing it, but they already had the skeleton done for ST, and then they had sweeper. Like, hey, let's just use the same one. That was like a 91, but I wouldn't. Yeah, that's all I got. All right, you guys are probably screaming someone at us right now. Please let us know. Add us on Twitter. You can send.
So you don't share any sort of.
I mean, a fear nervousness about it?
About the. Yeah,
I love it. No, I think it makes all the sense to me of this working because, the more that you can deceive where the ball is going, the better. And you have three of these that are generally looking the same. They aren't coming out with the same hump that a curveball would. They aren't coming out with the same exact dot.
That, and like, they're going to come out really similar velo. So like if you're looking velo, you're going to think it's the same pitch.
The wrist action is the same. At least it should be. I mean, it's very deceptive. It makes sense to me that this would work. And I mean, this was my whole thought process behind throwing sinkers and four seamers back in the day. Why not a cutter going the other way, right?
Why did it not work for Chad Patrick? What happened to Chad Patrick?
Well, Chad Patrick, I think he did two of them, but not three super well, right? Four seamer and cutter. Sinker was, it was really just the cutter on the four seamer playing the game, right? Like Jacob Lopez kind of did that during his hot stretch last year. He would tease people with the fastball away to right-handers and then come back over the cutter. Did Marco Estrada do that too? And then have the changeup? Like, I don't know.
Maybe. He had that straight change. Though, I mean, they have an iconic secondary pitch, they lose the comparison for me. But
yeah, that's very fair. I mean, the thing is also, remember, Schlitter coming up had both a sweeper and a curveball, then he really nailed it down to be the cutter in that start in George Steinbrenner Field last year.
And the curveball looks great. I asked him about that. He said, well, until they can hit my fastball, I don't need to throw the curveball.
This is the Jacob DeGrom rule, right? Yeah. Like, he's like, why would I not throw a fastball slider? I allow a hit on my curveball. I'm like, why wouldn't I just throw the slider?
Yeah,
that's a good point.
I guess looking at Patrick's line, also his locations were below average. Mm. I think it does require good command. And maybe that's why it can kind of come and go a little bit if they're dealing with something small. Like Wu has had a fairly extensive injury history. If there's something nagging him, then maybe he loses command for a couple starts and give up homers. And then,
well, speaking of command, how do you feel about Zebby Matthews? Because Zebby Matthews apparently had but he came back a bit yesterday. 7 innings, 200 runs, and I think it was 4 or 5 strikeouts. I believe it was 4-0 walks. My biggest thing against Zebby Matthews is that it's a 2025 version of him, but slightly worse stuff, and the same exact problem of throwing too many hittable strikes, too much command inside the zone and not the edges. That means it's good control, but not necessarily the pitches that you want. He allowed 8 hits in that game yesterday. And that's a bounce back. He's on your list here at a 5.7 ERA in the last 30 days. He had 2 good starts, and I believe it was 2 really bad ones.
I'm a little surprised by how good his projections are. I mean, and good is a relative term, but like, you know, Oopsy has a 4.17 ERA, a 1.24 whip. And, you know, I don't know why.
Low walk rate?
Yeah. Okay, that's it. Low walk rate. But yeah, what do you do with a low walk rate, but you're not sure the locations are good? It's just like,
it's a weird thing, you're in the zone,
but it's not good. I mean, I think it would lead you to the Bat X, for example, projects a 1.7 home runs per 9 for him.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'm not too surprised by that. I would imagine
I guess he could be a low whip guy with a league. I don't even want to give him league average strikeout rate. Low whip guy with a okay strikeout rate and a like a 4.34 ERA going forward. That's sort of how I see him.
3.34 with a low whip?
Like a 4.34 ERA. With like a usable whip, like a 1.2 something whip.
So he's a worse Brian Wu interview because what it is. That's like the Joe Ryan type of like you have a low or Imanaga even. You have a great whip, but then the home runs mess you up for the ERA.
Yeah, and like he does fit into a bit of our Triforce conversation because he's, you know, between the fastball, cutter, and sinker, he is like near 60%. But he's throwing these secondaries. The secondaries are all slower than they used to be. I don't have anything to grab onto and say, but we should like him for this. You
know, there's always something.
Yeah, I guess the low walk rate.
You know, yeah, he gives you a chance, right?
Yeah.
You know, maybe Koufax shows up and is like, all right, I'm going to bless you today with a lovely low BABIP.
I think he might be a good streamer. I mean, if you think about, the problem is at Detroit seems like a decent place to stream a guy and he gave up 7 runs. At Pittsburgh seems like a decent place to stream a guy and he gave up 7 runs. So I don't know. I think you're going to get burned. I think he looks like a good streamer and I think he'll also burn you.
The classic trap play.
Now
there is a pitcher that isn't necessarily on this list, but I need to know how you feel about him. This is someone who I remember last year he had some hype a little bit. Some people were like, oh, I really like this guy for Oakland. Sorry, the Athletics. And I'm trying to make people guess who this is. He had an injury last year. Finally, he's starting to get another chance to start. He pitched on Tuesday night.
I know who this is.
And threw 85 pitches, 5 innings, 300 runs, 6 hits, 2 walks, 6 Ks. I implore you, Eno, to go to his page and you'll see all of a sudden his movement is vastly different across his arsenal. And that was Jack Perkins. And I was waiting for you to say, Jack Perkins? I wasn't expecting that.
I know. I'm looking at Jack Perkins' page right now.
Good. I give you enough time to do that. And
I mean, I like that he's 96.
Not just 96. I mean, it's look at the IVB and IHB, right? The movement profiles of his sweeper, changeup, and slider, way different. The slider has lost 2 to 3 miles per hour and has gained 6 inches of drop and 2 to 3 inches of sweep. The sweeper itself has gained the same amount, actually, sorry, 2.5 of both vert drop rather and horizontal. The kick change goes down like at times like to -6 at 90 miles per hour. And what's the weirdest part is, if you scroll down, you know, you'll see his pitch movement plot. I put this in my daily SP roundup article. If you clicked on it, you'll see that he has some of these sweepers that are a -26 sweep. And then he has another sweeper that is like a hand of God, 8 inches of vert and -9 sweep. That, what? Those are both not sweepers. One is, are both?
He was in Sacramento, wasn't he?
Yes.
Wind, baby.
It's just all wind. Okay, good. That's what I was thinking about this. Let's just talk about Perkins' last two starts, because last time, where was he? Oh, yeah, Vegas.
Yeah.
Which, please tell me we'll never have to endure that again, you know? I'll be honest. I didn't even know they were going to play in Vegas until like 10 days ago. And I was saying, cool, they're going to be in Sacramento Verde in Sacramento. They go, Nick, it's in Vegas.
Well, the good news is that Sacramento is a tough place to pitch too. So you would have avoided either of them. But it turns out that Vegas is the toughest place to pitch. I think worse than Colorado, because infield there is hard as rocks.
Oh, my God. So, I mean, you know, I never thought I'd be happy to say that he's pitching in Sacramento.
Yeah, and I mean, like the sweeper is a seam shifted wake pitch. I really think it could grab the wind in different ways. I mean, I'm looking at the plot and I see it's just how crazy the sweeper plot looks. Generally, though, when I look at his plot, I do like it. It looks like the four seam has a little bit of unexpected ride given his arm slot.
Yeah. 14 inches of vert, 32 degree arm angle.
The kick change looks like it doesn't really throw a sinker. So there's, it doesn't look like a sinker. I mean, I think even if he threw a sinker, the kick change actually has less arm side movement than most sinkers. So, it's kind of somewhere between a splitter and a regular change.
Did you say a slitter?
Somewhere between a splitter and a regular change.
I was like, this is a new one. Okay, is that like a slider splitter? Is that like what Imai is actually throwing? Okay, sorry.
he throws a cutter, I mean, and he throws a regular sort of gyro slider. The sliders are erratic. That's the source of his poor command when he has poor command. It's, you can see it in the movement patterns like you've postulated. We haven't nailed that down yet, but you know, that I do think that there's an aspect to a large movement pattern having something to do with command not being great. Also, you can see that his gyro slider movement is like pretty close to a sweeper, you know? So there's some blending there. Yeah. I think he can refine that over time. I don't know why. First of all, you're starting with 96 mile an hour velo that he's kept as a starter. You're upsetting the expectation of the fastball movement. Those are really good foundations. I think with the kick change too, maybe he'll just, get rid of the gyro slider, you know, and just focus and maybe hone that sweeper. But I could see him taking a step forward. I like Jack Perkins, despite everything, in terms of what he has to deal with in his home park. It does make it hard to deal with a pitcher that you kind of want to start more on the road, because pitchers are just usually generally worse on the road. So
yeah,
a road only streamer is worse than a home only streamer for a couple of reasons. But Perkins is going to be in my top 100, I think. And you know, when you look at K minus BB, 19%, that's good. Look at Sierra, 330, that's good. Stuff, good. Locations, good. Whiff rate, good. Like most of it's good except for that big ERA number.
So really good point that you're making here is like, hey, he's holding the velocity as a starter, right? He hasn't done that this year. Last three games have been 75 pitches, 89. Now it's 85. Jack Perkins going 4-4-5 innings in those starts. The first one was in Houston. That was the first time, though, really getting an opportunity. And then Vegas and then Sacramento. One thing I do want to note is that in the final inning, his sixth inning, he allowed a home run to Brian Reynolds and then a double to Ryan O'Hearn and got the hook. That fastball he threw, and I wanted to make sure it was a fastball, not a cutter. It had fastball four-seamer movement at 93, and it was just destroyed. I mean, this is the first pitch, 93, groove it in there.
Oh, that's interesting, because if you look at the overall number for games, he's been keeping it above 96.
Right.
But you're saying that within the starts...
It was just this one. So if you go to the velocity trend tab, you can see it in the swim lanes, and it's really nice. And it might just be like, cool, it's the start of the sixth. I'm just going to groove this in here, and didn't get away with it.
Or maybe he's in the process of stretching out. So maybe, you know, he's, I think he can do it, because, and one of my last just sort of, he can do it, is that in 2023 he had 107 innings in the minor leagues. Mm-hmm. 2024 it was 78 in the minor leagues, and then last year you know, 80 plus.
Right, and that includes the injury too.
So I think he can easily get to 100 innings this year. And
I agree with you there. And I do want to mention, I know I can bet with you exactly what happened. He went 5 innings, finished it, right? He's at pitches. He's at 82 pitches.
Oh, he didn't think he was going back out. He
did not think he was going back out.
That not a that chance. Actually tracks, dude, because he probably unloaded a little bit.
Yeah, he threw a 96-97 mile per hour four seamer, which was the hardest of his inning, you know, as a called strike at to get to 0-2. Then he threw a beautiful, gorgeous changeup to Brandon and Lau, and that's it. And it's a great 91.5 changeup for a strikeout. I'm done. I'm sorry, what? Yeah,
kick change too.
So don't worry about that one. But Jack Perkins, he's an interesting one. His next starts will be in Sacramento against the Angels, at the Angels after that, and then back home hosting the Marlins. Looking at the opponents,
yeah, exactly.
in Sacramento. So I assume 15 team, you're like, I'm in for this. Now 12 teamer, would you?
Yeah, I think he might end up sort of on the cusp of where, you know, I actually don't think I have him in here. This is great that we brought him up.
Oh my gosh, you're doing ranking for tomorrow, you know?
Oh, I have him at 121. He's going to move up from there.
Would you drop Michael King in a 12 teamer for Jack Perkins, you know?
No, I would not.
Okay, we're on the same.
But I might have him as high as, like, my would you rathers might be Shane Drouin, Foster Griffin.
What? Foster Griffin is a Toby of Tobies. He gets it done against the bad teams. You're like, this is great. He's going to go 6 innings constantly. Easy. Yeah,
but I just told you, I'm not starting Perkins every time out. So he's going to go in
so Foster Griffin has already gone 6 innings with production many a time. We haven't seen it once from Foster Griffin.
You're just saying Foster Griffin for sure.
Yes.
So you like Shane Drouin as a better would you rather? Because Shane Drouin is
Tough for me. Shane Drouin, I'm actually really curious to hear your take on him, because I think when I initially saw him converted to a starter, I led with him being like, we ride with Drouin. Okay, that was my I didn't know it was Drouin. I apologize if it's Drouin. And then the next one, I was really tepid at what I saw. Like, it wasn't anything that's really exciting inside of the mix. And when I considered the Milwaukee Brewers situation, I thought, well, hold on a second. You got Mizorowski, you got Harrison. Okay. You have Woodruff coming back. You have Henderson coming back soon. You got Sproat also. And you've
I don't
got
know. Henderson just got an injection in his back. I don't know.
I mean, if they're doing that, that means to me like they're speeding up the process, but maybe not. Anytime I hear like the injection, I feel like it's soon, but I could be very wrong. Maybe Henderson's a month away or so. That's fine with me. That still leaves 6 guys though, right? Sproat, Gasser, Woodruff, Harrison.
But I just don't think Gasser's. Yeah. I don't think Gasser's a major leaguer right now.
Okay, so Gasser went last night at 5.2 innings of shutout ball, 2 hits, 2 walks, and 5 Ks.
That I did. I
didn't mean it as a gotcha. I mean, like, okay, this is leading to. I did not mean it like that, because I actually led with him this morning, and I said to myself, this is interesting. Maybe the four seamer is good enough at that low arm angle. He used it as a 2-strike pitch against right-handers, but there is no changeup in here. And I wouldn't really say that the sweeper is that great to right-handers. And he didn't strike out a single left-hander. Didn't get that sweeper away enough. He didn't get the sinker inside enough. It's not really like that exciting. Do you think that they would still give that a shot though? Because Gasser has been more highly pushed than for this gig, while Drouin's doing like the whole Chad Patrick thing of kind of going like, their middle relief, you start here and then, okay, cool, not so much. And then we're going to start him again. I'm curious. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm looking at these scatter charts, even from his good start, and like, Gasser. What's he doing with that four-seam, man? That I see, like, what is it, like 8 like not useful four-seams?
Like you're saying too high up, non-competitive.
Yeah, just non-competitive. Yeah.
He's completely trying to go high four-seamer. He threw 60%+ 2-strike four-seamers.
He has better command low in the zone. It seems like they're almost going against his tendencies. Like maybe he just developed command low in the zone over the course of his high school or college or whatever career when everyone told him to throw low in the zone. And yeah. Now they're like, throw high in the zone. He's like, I can't.
Yeah. My guess is that it's just for two strike counts that he's elevating so much and missing super high.
Mm. That's a good guess.
But even that is like, all right.
But even the sinker, you know, even the sinker is like all over the place.
I'm totally in agreement with you here. That I prefer Drouin over Gasser. At the same time, I don't know. I want you to go more into Drouin and what you see in him that says, hey, look, this is worthy of, I don't even know where you stand on Jack Perkins versus Drouin.
I think I'll put Perkins above Drouin, and both of them behind Foster.
I think we're on the same page there. I think a lot of people were upset that I did not have Drouin on my top 100. He was like one of the last ones out, and I just felt it's not worthy to chase.
Oh, and by the way, this is in the late 70s, early 80s in my ranks, so we're not too far off of each other.
When are you rankings coming out?
In fact, I have not yet gone through this, and I know for a fact that the 70s and 80s and 90s are going to look a lot different when I publish my ranks, because I put a lot of pictures in there and I have to go back and sort through them, because I was just surprised. Like when I got to like 40, no, I didn't. I got to, yeah, I got to about 40 and I was like, okay, what?
Yeah. it's pretty bad right now.
Like I had Taj Bradley in my top 50.
What? No, you didn't.
But I mean,
there's
45 pitchers missing. So I have Taj Bradley in my top
79. 79, you know.
I'm not done with any of this, but in my initial sorting process, these guys ended up in the low 70s. What I like about Drouin is a wide pitch mix with command, basically. I do think he has an out pitch in the slider, and I think he does enough of the Triforce. I mean, he's 28% fastball, 22% sinker, 14% cutter. I do think there's some similarities with Chad Patrick, but when just looking at Chad Patrick's page, I was surprised by how poor his location numbers were, and I think Drouin's are better. Interesting enough, though, Fangraphs gave him a 45 grade on command, so this could be a small sample mirage, or it could be what Milwaukee improved over his time with Boston, or it could be why they picked him up, because his walk rate in Boston when they got him before the trade was the best he'd ever shown.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I wouldn't. When I see a guy that's just doing this well with a 65% strike rate on the year, I don't think that control is bad. I don't think it's a 45 in my head. I mean, it's maybe it was before, but I'm not really buying that. I mean, so with what we've gotten from Drouin so far, curveball, slider, four seamer, sinker, rare cutter, rare changeup, right? At least this is as a starter that I'm seeing the last three games. And I don't know if that slider is going to consistently be that thing to right-handers. To lefties, it should, right? I mean, that's just your standard, okay, great year. For the year, he has a 27% swing strike rate on that slider to lefties, right? The real question to me is how good is his approach to right-handers? I don't know.
Yeah.
He has a 22% swing strike rate on his four-seamer upstairs, by the way, to right-handers. I don't know if I buy that. I don't know if that's going to stick around.
It's a hard enough gyro to me with the next secondary being a curveball, where you know I think that works against opposite hand.
An 86 slider with an 80 curve.
Yeah, you want that to be 88-90.
Yeah, I want that to be like a back foot slider. If I'm going to focus on that, if you're a lefty, you need to show me a changeup, an overpowering four seamer, or a like slider cutter that is harder, right? Something really proved to you. If you're a slinging lefty, then fine. Maybe it could be like the Chris Sale 83 or whatever. But
interesting enough, his approach against righties so far has been mostly sinkers, four seamers, and curveballs with some, I think, what looks to be at back footed attempts at back footed sliders.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not buying
it. I'm surprised how many sinkers I'm seeing in the opposite handed bin here.
Yeah, me too. That doesn't make sense. I mean, it's a lot of strikes. Maybe it's the four seamer sinker situation of the sinker coming down over the or under the four seamer, right? You have a 6-inch drop difference. So if you
like
keep
playing them off each other. Yeah.
I mean, look, it could be the RAS pack here. You have cutters at 15% usage. So 15 to righties and then sinker and four seamer is just a little bit slower. So here it is, you know, what you've been looking for. The lower velocity RAS pack.
That's right.
Let's see if this works out. Machine drawn.
I did also, before we leave, I wanted to point out that we are not idiots. Bryce Elder, last 30 days, 5.88 ERA.
Yeah. That's what you're saying. Martin
had to point that one out. I do think it's interesting. Ranger Suarez, a 4.56 ERA. I've struggled with my own rankings of him. He's actually moving up in my ranks. I think it might be a little bit of general attrition, but also a tough one for me is Freddie Peralta, 5.02 ERA in the last month. I think there's been a drop off and stuff for him.
I agree. With Freddie Peralta, I've called him the right-handed Robbie Ray, and then I didn't mean it to be like now Robbie Ray.
Yeah,
you know, that's the joke I keep making. And that's another one. Like, we haven't even talked about him. I don't know how he's not on this list, but Robbie Ray has been through the ringer.
I think it's because his projections going forward are not as good anymore.
it's wild to me, just like how.
Oh, okay. Here's one that has some hype to it, and we're not dunking anybody to finish, right? Because I had to dunk on Bryce Elder. I got a lot of angry emails about that.
Enough, and then, you know,
hey, Davis Martin with a 7 ERA. I got emails about him too. So,
It's really two starts. It was the Twins, and of course, last night against the Yankees. They were really the bad ones. And I actually, what I see, I don't know if you're the same way, you know, but I see a really bad start from someone. I sometimes have to be the guy that's like, okay, good. Okay, we expected a bad start, but like he's also better than that. You know? So let's not write him off now in the same way we're not just gonna always slot him in, right?
And I wouldn't have, even if I owned him, I would not have used him against the Yankees in the Yankee Stadium.
Right.
That's on the level of the sort of like Colorado for me.
Okay. I got one for you.
This is what I got for you. Maybe it's the same guy.
That was Dave Martin.
Connelly Early?
Oh, no, that wasn't it. But I'm curious to hear your take on Connelly Early.
Well, you know, I kind of put him in a weird bucket to begin with where I was like, oh, this is going to be a big mix with command lefty, right? This is what's so exciting about him. But the command isn't that great. This stuff isn't like that outerworldly. You know, it's just like a 420 Sierra. It's a bang average K minus BB, a bit of a home run problem right now, which I think that part is probably the part that'll go away. I think it is good enough stuff to overcome that. But it is weird that like you can look at a young guy coming up and say 101 stuff plus 94 mile an hour fastball, big mix, lefty, 5% walk rate. And then a year later be like, 101 stuff plus.
Well, here's the thing. Lefty. You know? Right. So, this is part of a larger conversation, but I feel like what we do a lot at this point in the year is we start to make, we start to carve who they are for the full year, 2 months in. Mm. Right. We start to say, like, this is who this guy is now. And I like doing that for more of the veteran arms a little bit more. Like if you look at Zach Gallen last year, or you see kind of Sandy Alcantara kept doing that for a while and so on and so forth. It's easier to do that for Edward Cabrera right now, whatever. Mm-hmm. However, I think what I try to do is say, this is a guy who's pitching his first full season in the bigs. And what he's done the first 2 months, I don't expect him to do the final 2 months, mm-hmm. right? Because this is what development is. We don't just see a guy who's going to be really good in the future as great always when he's here. It's you see why it would work. You see that he's going to go through adversity. And at some point, we think that it's going to come together a bit better. I think that's what we're seeing with Connelly Early. And I think second half, am I saying, all right, do I think it's going to be good or not? I'm going to say yes. However, I am not necessarily going to hold on to it if I have things like, honestly, in many cases, Foster Griffin could be better than Connelly Early right now. I still like him enough to hold in a 12-teamer, but I do recognize that, yeah, I don't know exactly when that development will happen.
And I think a lot of it has to do with fastball command real quick, where, right now his fastball command is not great against, I've got this here in the platoon splits, against lefties, same-handed hitters, his fastball command is a 90 location plus. Against opposite, it's 95. Both those numbers need to be up a little bit. And I think just something as small as that, getting those to league average command will open up a lot of things for him. I think that would lead to, more of the walk rates that he had in the minors, plus a higher strikeout rate and fewer home runs. That can all come from a little bit of an improvement in fastball command.
I mean, look, one of my favorite things to do with this, you guys listening back, you can hit the rewind button. What did I say? What the biggest noise is in a monthly sample, it's home run rate.
Yeah.
So who are the highest homer per nine guys right now in the top 10 in the past 30 days? Shota Umenaga, Ryan Weathers, Mike Burrows. Okay. Mm. Griffin Canning, fine. Connelly Early, Tanner Bibee, Sandy Alcantara, Ryan Nelson, Merrill Kelly, and Colin Wright. Right? So you can understand some of that regression coming for some of those guys. Like, okay, cool. This will be better, is what we think with them. Nathan Eovaldi is there at 12th at 1.93. But on the other side, what we didn't discuss, I'm going to say the aces first. We have Logan Webb. We have Jacob Mizorowski. We have Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Drew Rasmussen, and Logan Webb all inside that top 15, right? Of like fewest home runs allowed for nine.
Some of them have zero home runs in the last month.
Ben Brown is second with zero. Okay. Yeah. We want to understand his ERA 1.91. There you go. Dustin May is there, but Dustin May makes a little bit more sense as such a heavy ground ball guy. And yet it's only a 54%. It's not like it's an 80%. So there's that element, even though, hey, pat ourselves in the back, right? We were talking about him 2 weeks ago. Look at this. Okay. Brandon Young is another one who's gone by. Walker Buehler. How is he doing a 2.77 ERA?
That one just seems
somehow
like a
forgot
lot of,
about home
luck.
Runs.
That's
not
going to
stick around. Yeah. Right. So it's an interesting practice to just look at that and understand, okay, this might be a sell high for certain guys and some that I maybe should not be buying in on. Also, we never talked about Max Meyer, but we're going to have to save it for another time. Maybe when Eno puts out his rankings. When are you going to be doing that, Eno?
Friday.
Oh my gosh, next week, guys. I'm supposed to do that podcast with you before it, but it's okay. It's all right. Fine.
We did just do it.
I'll just send you some text.
We did just do it. We have a lot of ranking. I have a lot of guys. We just talked about that.
Where do you have Max Meyer?
He has been moving up. He's got a big green arrow next to him.
Don't tell me like
45. I've got him. Huh?
Don't say 45.
Are you looking at my sheet?
Wait, seriously?
Yeah.
No. You're kidding. You're joking. Funny. Is it exactly 45?
Yeah. I don't know if he'll end up there, but
you better
there's
not.
A bit of a grouping there.
You have Taj Bradley higher than him.
Which is what I'm saying. It's not going to
I am debating giving Max Meyer ace is going to ace, It is the best fastball of his career. And two amazing breakers. I will say, actually, his fastball was down to 16 inches of vert for the first time since like the third week of the season in his last start, but that shouldn't be a problem.
And there's something that bothers me. The biggest movement profile changes, especially when there's like they're going against their arm slot or whatever. This is totally anecdotal, but like Emerson Hancock has lost
Tell me,
four
how
inches
much
of IBB.
Do you have this? Huh? I was going to ask you this. How much has it changed through the year? I don't have this data for whatever reason. Uh-huh. And I just know it's changed with every single start going down like it's a crank. I can hear the ticks every single start.
You can actually do it.
Like a trebuchet.
It's started at 14. Let's just do the fastball. It started at 14, 13, 14. You can do it on the Fangraphs game log. Then it dropped to 10, then he got it back up 12, 14, 13, then 11, 8, 9, 7, 8. So he's dropped 6 degrees on the four seam since the beginning of the season.
Why?
I don't know. Is it a positive thing that the coaches like, and he's working on mechanics and he's getting to a place where he wants to be? Cause it's almost like the righty Chris Sale at some point. But you know, as he does this, he's also losing some of the deceptive qualities of his fastball in terms of he went from an 8. This is Fangraphs. He lost 4 or 5 inches of vert on his fastball. You can see
that. Oh yeah, no. It's so funny. It was 15 to start the year, and it's like every game, it's like, can we go lower? And it's gone down to like 6 and 7 now. Every and the start, sinker it was 1 inch or 2 inch,
and the sinker has gone down like 1 inch. Over.
Yeah.
And that's not good because that means they're getting closer together. So I just think that sometimes you make big changes and sometimes your body regresses back to where you used to be.
I don't get it, you know.
So sometimes when I see these big year over year changes in pitch mix or stuff, I actually get a little bit skeptical.
Oh, I dig that. All right. Well, on that note, you know, it is an absolute pleasure to see you again. Thank you so much for picking up the phone. And I'm looking forward to your rankings. Freddie, we'll obviously break it down next week. You better have Max Meyer in the top 30, if not 25.
Number one.
For what?
Number
or
one.
Or what? You're not coming number back one. On the show. I'm just going to spend every episode of the crap being like, I just can't believe you know stairs. I just can't believe it. He deserves it. All right. That is it for this episode of The Craft. An absolute pleasure with Eno Saris and all of you listening. My name is Nick Pollock. We'll talk about The Craft of Pitching again next week.